This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. You already know the voice of Frank Oz.
Oh, a hamburger. Yeah. Very good choice. And you have another choice. You see, the hamburger in our restaurant comes in two sizes. We have a little hamburger, and we have a big hamburger. May I suggest you take the little hamburger?
It's pretty messy in there, Bert.
Well, Ernie, you're just a little messy. I've learned that. I'm used to it.
Looking? Found someone you have, I would say.
Right.
Help you I can. Yes.
I don't think so. I'm looking for a great warrior.
Oh! Great warrior? Oh! Wars not make one great.
Will you be a twerp? Just touch me, oh hog of my heart!
Here's a touch for you, wimp buzzard!
I'm ready!
He has been Grover, Bert, Fozzie Bear, Yoda, Miss Piggy, and so many more classic characters. And now you'll get to hear him as someone you may not have heard. Himself. He and four of his colleagues star in the new documentary Muppet Guys Talking about their experiences working with Jim Henson. It's Frank Oz, and you'll hear our conversation with him after a break.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Babbel, one of the world's leading language apps. Learn to confidently speak a new language with Babbel's 10 to 15-minute lessons. Choose from 14 languages, like Spanish, French, or German. You'll learn your new language through fun, real-life dialogues, speech recognition, and interactive trainers and quizzes. Download the app or go to Babbel, Babbel.com to try your first Babbel lesson for free.
Hey, it's Maria Hinojosa, host of NPR's Latino USA, the podcast that takes you inside the Latino conversation. Each week, we'll take you into one story that will fascinate and often surprise you. Listen to Latino USA on the NPR One app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Frank Oz, welcome to 1A.
Thank you.
When you hear all those different voices, what do you think that all of those different voices and personas and characters live in your heart and your head?
Oh, yeah, they all do. But it's not the voices. The voices are 5% of it. The voices are just an add-on. It's the rest of it that's important.
What's the other 95%? How would you break it down?
Well, number one is the actual depth of the character and who the character is. And then certainly the other 95% also is the actual performing of the character live with the other performers.
I do want to talk about your characters, of course, much more than just the voices and the faces and the personas as we go through our conversation. But let me back up just a step. How did you get into working with the Muppets? How did you meet Jim Henson?
Well, I was 17 years old. He saw a show that I did. And then when he moved from Washington, D.C. to New York City, he needed a performer. And he remembered me. And I was 19 years old at that time. And he brought me over to try for 6 months. And I just stayed with him.
What about you two clicked? How did you know that this was something you were going to want to sink your teeth into?
I didn't know. I wanted to be a journalist.
Really?
I had no intention to be a puppeteer or a performer at all. No, by no means. And we didn't sync at all. I was an employee. I was 19 years old. After maybe about 10 years, we got together. But, it was not full blown. It was a process.
So when you started, you wanted to be in journalism.
Yeah.
What kind of journalism did you envision yourself doing?
Well, I wanted to I was thinking there was a columnist in the Oakland Tribune called Bill Fazay. And I thought, how cool to have somebody there who can just write what they feel like every day. And so that's the kind of thing I wanted to do.
I think you made the better decision as a journalist. I think the characters you get to play with are a lot more fun, and I think on behalf of your fans, I think you made the better choice. But I wonder when you actually consciously pivoted towards working with Jim Henson. What was it at first about his work that kind of appealed to you, attracted you, made you think, oh, that's something I might want to do instead?
Well, it didn't come that way. It's not something I want to do instead. I just got out of high school. I had made my trip to Europe by rucksack for about a month, and came back and was into journalism. So it wasn't a choice. It was just Jim had asked me to come try it. And I thought, okay, well, that sounds great, because what I've seen of his work is amazing. And my parents were very supportive, and it must have been very difficult for them. But it wasn't like a conscious decision that I'm going to be somebody. Life doesn't happen that way, as far as I'm concerned. Maybe it did for you, but it just doesn't for me.
I kind of love the fact that you originally were going to be a journalist. The studio where they produce Meet the Press here in Washington is also the studio where Jim Henson made one of his first television appearances at WRC Television over on Nebraska Avenue, Northwest.
Sam and Friends.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll be darned. I didn't know that.
It's true. I walked in. Last time I did Meet the Press over on NBC, I walked in and there's a plaque in the corner of the studio. It's where they did one of the Kennedy-Nixon debates. It's where Jim Henson was on. And I swear I got more geeked out over the fact that Jim Henson was there than over the fact that I was about to be on Meet the Press. It was a huge honor.
That's great. I mean, at that time, I was not part of the Muppets at all. I joined in 1963. But, people may not know in Washington, D.C., Jim actually auditioned for this. He didn't know anything about puppets at all. All he wanted to do was get into television. And he got this 5-minute gig with he and his wife, Jane, that was, I think, every night before the Huntley Brinkley News. So it was geared to adults in order to grab an audience to then transition to the news. So that's how he started.
We've been getting a lot of lovely comments from some of our listeners about the impact of your work on them and their families. Stephanie in Tucson writes, Frank Oz is a superstar. He helped me survive both childhood and motherhood via Sesame Street. From what I understand, he was also instrumental in the amazing puppeteering of the delightfully evil plant in one of my favorite movies, Little Shop of Horrors. Mary in Houston writes, when my two sons were small, we had a host of puppets and small stuffed animals who all had names and personalities. We spent hours doing puppet shows, and the boys never knew I was the voice behind them, even though they could see that I was. They treated each puppet as a real, breathing thing. All of my inspiration came from watching Sesame Street and the Muppets when I was young. Thank you, Frank Oz, and everyone involved with Jim Henson. I wonder if that's a good place to talk about how you create these kinds of characters. Here is a clip from the documentary where you discuss the development of Miss Piggy.
You know, I always love hidden things in characters.
Yeah.
And what's hidden in her is that she can't sing, she can't tell jokes, she can't dance, she's a pig.
Yeah, she's not attractive.
She's single, but she has this tremendous bravado. She covers all the pain.
Yeah.
That's the reason she's funny. I suppose all this stuff is my insecurity, my neurosis with Piggy,
all just pieces of you that you all of a sudden magnify.
Absolutely.
A clip from the documentary Muppet Guys Talking. So, Frank, it sounds like you find different pieces of yourself, just like an actor would do with any other character, and then you infuse that into the character that you build.
Yeah, you don't do it intellectually, but it just happens. Let me talk about the documentary so people aren't confused.
Please.
The documentary was instigated by my wife, Victoria LaBalm, who's also a producer. She saw me and Dave Goles, Bill Beretta, etc., and the other guys playing together and working together, and she'd never seen that kind of work atmosphere. And she wanted to share that with the world because nobody actually knows how Jim worked, and it was so unique, and that's why we became successful. She said, let's do it, and let's make a documentary on it and talk to the guys. And I said no. And I said no for about a year until she told me again to do it, and I said yes afterwards. And I just didn't think people would be interested. That's all.
Is that why you initially said no, because you thought people wouldn't be interested?
Yeah. Yeah, I was 19 when I joined Jim, and this was my daily routine. So for me, it was normal, and I figured, why would people be interested in something that's so normal to me?
Describe that daily routine. What was a day of working with Jim Henson like?
Well, it depended on what point of life you're talking about. If you're talking about when Jim was really successful and had the company was in Los Angeles, London, and New York. Or if you're talking about us when we were in two rooms on 53rd Street and 2nd on a one-flight walk-up, I'm not sure which way to go on that, you know?
Well, let's start with the earlier days when the company was much smaller. What went into putting Jim Henson's work together? I imagine, like a lot of creative projects, they were very long work days, lots of trial and error until you got things just the way Jim wanted them.
Well, it's not to please Jim. It was not that way. Jim was part of it all. We just worked together collaboratively. That's why it's difficult to describe, and that's why this document is important to people, how it was to work with Jim. He didn't tell us what to do. We weren't there to please him. We were there to help create, all of us together, something special of quality, and Jim was included. We weren't just doing it and he was the boss. So, and all that is in the documentary of how Jim really created a situation in which we felt safe to work and we had fun and there's no politics and it was all about doing the best for each other. So that's a rare, rare situation. And that's what I grew up in with Jim. And that's something we wanted to share with everybody else.
A lot of love for some of your characters, Frank. Patricia wrote on our website, the1a.org, "Totally love Miss Piggy and Yoda, both different but with so much presence. When a puppet can make you cry, you know you've done a great job," and they certainly did. I wonder, Frank, about characters like Miss Piggy. There's something delightfully edgy about Miss Piggy. I wonder if you think that a character like her could be created today. There's something very unpolitically correct about a female character created by a guy who's named Miss Piggy. Could you get away with that today?
I think so. I think if the character is pure and honest, it touches the purity and honesty of the people. I don't think it has anything to do with politics, although Piggy came about during the Women's Lib movement in the 1970s. But no, I think if the character is funny and honest, I don't see a reason why. As a matter of fact, it's needed today more than ever.
How so?
Well, we're in a period in this country, as you know, of black and white, of not in races, but in attitudes, and it's not healthy. And people are at each other, and it's time people need to have an opportunity to realize that, oh, the world's not all like that. With the Muppets, you were able to see that there can be people together who are totally strange, different species, different kinds of people, all flawed, and yet they have affection for each other and they work things out. And I think that's needed. And that's what the documentary is for, really. The documentary has about 160 clips and it has a lot of stories and secrets about the Muppets that nobody's ever heard of. And it's the first time we've ever gotten together and talked about it. And so it's all very funny and great stories and secrets about how Jim worked Kermit in the swamp and all these things. But the larger idea is to show that, you know what, the world doesn't have to be the way it is now. The world can actually be more tolerant and inclusive.
When did that begin to emerge as a central theme of Jim Henson's work? Was that always there?
Well, yeah, let me just I'm just going to throw this in here because I want people to see this. I really want people to see how it was to work with Jim. So I'm just going to throw in the fact that they can get it at MuppetGuysTalking.com. As a matter of fact, it's the only place they can get it. I just want to throw in MuppetGuysTalking.com because we could talk about this for a long time, and right. Then people say, where do we see this?
Right.
So what was your question?
Well, I'm wondering about the way that ethos emerged. I mean, growing up watching Sesame Street, it was very clear that the themes had to do with friendship and being a good neighbor and being helpful and being compassionate. And even with all the craziness of the Muppets on like the Muppet Show or the ride Muppet Vision at Disney World, it was always this very diverse cast of characters that had this friendship and love between them. That was a very clear ethos that I got. I'm wondering if that was always there, if that was part of the initial intent that Jim Henson had, or if he kind of discovered it along the way.
It's not an intent. You know, if you have an intent and it's an intellectual intent, you really can't get very successful touching people. You know, you can't you want to touch their hearts, not their minds. And we want to touch our hearts and not our minds. You know, Jim was Jim in the beginning was violent. His stuff was violent. He'd have explosions. He'd have all over, and people would eat, characters would eat each other, and it was very violent. And Sesame Street, but very funny. It's when he joined Sesame Street is when things got softer because it was aimed at children, even though we didn't perform for children at all. I've never performed for children in my life, and neither has Jim or any of us. It's a process that came from, there's two things. One is all those themes you mentioned didn't come from Jim. They came from the writers on Sesame Street. But the actual inclusivity of disparate people came from Jim, but it wasn't a thought process. It was just the human being he was. And as the days and weeks and months and years wore on, when decisions were made towards inclusivity and tolerance and screwing around,
right?
So we don't look like little elves.
I do want to talk more about that process as we continue our conversation with Frank Oz, the director and producer of the documentary Muppet Guys Talking, in just a moment. Stay close.
We'd like to thank our sponsor who brings you this message, Discover Card, who alerts you if they find your Social Security number on any one of thousands of risky websites. Discover believes there are some things that you just need to know. It's just another way Discover looks out for you, not just your account. And best of all, Social Security alerts are free for Discover Card members. All you have to do is sign up online. Learn more at discover.com/free alerts. Limitations apply.
It's Lulu Miller, and I am back with a new story for Invisibilia. It is about the pleasures.
It's just electric.
And the dangers.
There's just nothing more scary.
Of trying to live between two worlds. You can find Invisibilia on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
Susan wrote on our website, the1a.org, my infant daughter's first words were, Bert, Ernie. She was in her crib and looked very seriously up at me and uttered her first words, Bert, Ernie. My heart melted. Frank Oz, do you have any favorite Muppets? Which characters are closest to your heart?
You mean the characters that I used to work?
Yeah.
Because I used to work them. I haven't performed them for about 9 years.
Well, as you look back on your work, are there any that you reflect on with particular pride or gratitude or that hold a particularly warm place in your heart?
Yeah, I don't look at I don't see it as pride or gratitude. I see it as affection. But certainly, you know, the ones that seem to be closest to me are Grover and Fozzie, although there's all parts of me and every one of them, like the other performers. Like on the documentary, you'll hear us talk about how there are parts of us in each of the characters they do, like Jerry Nelson and Floyd and Dave Goals and Bunsen Honeydew. And actually, it's fascinating. When we got together, Dave explained how he created his characters. And I never knew that. So this gathering really was news to us in many ways. But to answer your question, those two seem to have a sense of ease and a sense of that touch me a bit more.
One of the interesting things about the documentary, which I've had the pleasure to see, and it was a hoot, I really enjoyed watching it, is that a lot of the conversation, as you just said, was kind of revealing to one another what working for Jim Henson was like for them. I got the sense almost of getting a fish to describe water for the first time. And you kind of don't understand it until the other fish describes it to you. And then you go, oh, that's what that was like for you. Oh, yeah, I went through the same thing. It kind of felt like you each had your individual experiences of working with Jim Henson. And then the conversation kind of allowed you to share it with one another.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think actually it's said not in the documentary, but all this bonus footage that we have that we're putting together, that Dave Gold says it. You know, that Jim was one way with him and one way with me. It's like you're one way with your wife, and then you're one way with your coworkers, and we all fall into that pattern. You know, but yeah, absolutely.
We have a number of working puppeteers listening.
I'm not suggesting that how you talk to your wife is radically different than your co-workers.
Right. I think it sounds like what you mean is that, you know what works to get the best work out of this person, which might be different than getting the best work out of that person. And over time, you kind of figure out what they need to thrive. Is that it?
Kind of. I mean, there's no absolutes here. There's no labels here. It's the process is the answer. The answer doesn't come before the process. So I'll say kind of yes.
A number of working puppeteers are in our audience. Terrence wrote on our website, the1a.org, "I am a professional touring puppeteer and watched Sesame Street as a young boy back in 1969. Frank Oz is an inspiration to me and my puppetry." Cuddlepup tweets, "I was a performer on an internet puppet show for 16 years. The Muppets were a tremendous inspiration, and for me, especially Grover and his innocent outlook on life. Thank you, Frank Oz, for so many great memories and characters." Frank, one of the things that I noticed from the documentary is how demanding physically puppeteering is, especially with so many different kinds of Muppets, some of which you needed both hands for, some of which you put your whole body into. It's very physical work.
Well, it's also sometimes, Jim also created dangerous work for us. I mean, very dangerous work. And that's in the documentary too. People don't realize that when they see a character, that there's always a person underneath the character and you have to hide it. And as a result, we had to do it in ways that that were very uncomfortable and dangerous. But that all came with the territory. We never complained about that. That's just the way it is. We didn't do any CGI at all. That was when, like, for instance, Little Shop of Horrors, that was when I did that. I directed that. That was all live. The Muppet stuff that we've done in all the movies were live. And that's kind of exciting because it is a more of a tactile experience, in my opinion, But yeah, it's uncomfortable, and it's hard, sweaty work, and we really don't even think about that part of it. That's what you have to do in order to get it done.
Little Shop of Horrors came up with some of our listeners. Spencer wrote on our Facebook page, "He's also a great director with Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, Little Shop of Horrors, and Bowfinger being the standouts. He also co-directed The Dark Crystal with Jim Henson." Here is a little clip of one of, I think, a lot of your favorite movies, Little Shop of Horrors.
Does it have to be human?
Beep, beep.
Does it have to be mine?
Beep, beep.
Where am I supposed to get it?
Feed me, Seymour. Feed me all night long.
That's right, boy.
You can do it. Feed me, Seymour. Feed me all night long. 'Cause if you feed me, Seymour, I can grow up big and strong.
A clip from Little Shop of Horrors. Frank, how did you get into directing?
Jim asked me to. First of all, I gave myself 10 years to direct because that's what I wanted to do, although I wanted a theater direct first, which I've done. We have an off-Broadway play right now, and a show on off-Broadway, which is a huge hit, which is fantastic. So I got there finally. But through movies, and I gave myself 10 years to learn to be a director because Jim wanted to be a director. And then so I learned about film and such. And Jim eventually, out of the blue, asked me to co-direct Dark Crystal with him, which was a huge movie. And after Dark Crystal, he asked me to make Muppets Take Manhattan. And then after that, David Geffen asked me to do Little Shop of Horrors, and I didn't screw up. So I was asked to do another one. I did Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. I didn't screw that one up, so I kept on being asked.
Paul in Charlestown, West Virginia asks, "I've always wondered about the physical demands of performing with these puppets. Do the puppeteers sit in chairs beneath the sets we see? Do they crouch? What is it like to work with your arm raised for hours? Any repetitive stress injuries or pulled muscles?"
Yeah, but they're not raised for hours. We're not thoroughbred racers where we race around the track. We're quarter horses where we expend a tremendous amount of energy, but in a shorter period of time. So we will have our arms up for 15, 20 minutes, but beyond that, you can't really work the character very well. But even that's painful. And discomforting, but that's okay. We sustain the pain, essentially. We separate it from our body because we have to keep moving. But it's all physical work, which makes it fun. And no one's ever complained about that. And Jim never complained about anything. We never had any complaints about anything because Jim did things first, and we couldn't say no to what Jim wanted us to do because he did it himself. I could tell so many stories, and the stories are there in the documentary of all the physical work we did. Yeah. Well, that's part of the secrets we were finally revealing.
Yeah, I don't want to give the story away from the documentary, but as you described some of what Jim Henson put himself through physically to shoot certain scenes, clearly there were some physical things that he did that were very, very painful just to get the right shot.
Yeah, and dangerous. Yeah, absolutely. Jim had no barriers. There was nothing impossible for Jim. If he had a vision of something, we damn well will do it.
Another listener emailed, I met a woman a few years ago who helped actually make the puppets themselves. How many women were part of the old crew, and how was the dynamic between men and women?
How interesting. I've been asked that before. The crew was usually men I'm not sure about the crew, but the performers were usually men, although we actively looked for women, and Fran Brill finally came on board. As we actively looked for different races, as a matter of fact, in auditions. But there were women in the workshop and men, Raleigh Crewson being one of them, who has been with Jim for 35 years. And, she was also working with me on the floor, which means that when I was performing, she would be next to me making sure that the characters were working properly. If there's any problems, and she would fix them. But so I don't know if there's more men than women or not in that area. I think workshop is pretty even. Performing, it was mostly men. And how we got along with each other, I think we got along with each other as anybody does. If a person is lousy, then we get along lousy. If it's a person's good, we get along well.
If Fran Brill, by the way, is in the documentary, she, among other characters, played Prairie Dawn, Betty Lou, the Countess, a number of many of your favorite Muppet characters. Zirin tweeted, I love Frank Oz, and when his voice returned to the animated Yoda in Star Wars Rebels, it filled a long absent void. I was so happy to hear it. How did Yoda come about?
Essentially, I was asked to do it. Jim was asked to do it, and he realized that he couldn't. He was running a company, and also it was not something that that he could do as well because he had different talents. And then George asked me, and that's how it happened.
How did you build the character? How much of the cadence and the style and that sentence structure that Yoda has, how much of that did you create, and how much of that did George Lucas just say, do this?
Well, George never said do this. Anybody who says do this, I run like hell. I don't take that. George and Larry Kasdan, who wrote Empire Strikes Back, did write that language. It was just not consistent. It was on and off during the scene. So I just asked George, could we have it all the time? And he said yes.
I wonder, reflecting on Jim Henson, since a lot of the film is a reflection of him, we got a number of comments about the impact of Jim Henson on people's lives, especially people who work in the creative arts today. Matt emailed, I was a 13-year-old boy in Boston when Jim Henson passed away. I wrote and got published a letter to the editor in the Boston Globe about his influence on me. And then my mother bought us 2 train tickets to New York City to attend his funeral. I'll never forget any of it. Today, I'm a stand-up comedian based in Washington, D.C., and I carry Jim Henson and Frank Oz's voices and humor with me every single day. They are 2 of my central influences, and I wouldn't be the person that I am without them. Thank you, Frank Oz.
Wow. Well, I hear a lot of that, and it's really nice, but I also accept it in the name of people who aren't here, Jim and Richard Hunt and Jerry Jewell and Don Saline and all the other performers and workshop people. You know, they should be all sitting in this booth here talking to you, but I happen to be the one who gets the credit here. But it's, you know, we hear a lot of that, and it's extraordinary how we've touched people. We didn't plan that. We as adults just had fun for each other, and we didn't play to children by any means. We just played to each other, and we didn't think about the millions and millions of people who saw it. We just were in the studio and we did our best and had fun, and then went on to the next thing. But so we can't grasp when somebody says that to us. It's just too large.
No. Another movie, by the way, before we let you go, that a number of people commented on. Bob in Naples, Florida wrote, how did you land the role as the jail person in the movie Blues Brothers? Before we go.
John Landis is a friend of mine, and John just asked me to be there. And I did several of John's films, and I did it as a director. I wasn't an actor. I wanted to remind myself how frightening it was for, and vulnerable it was for a human being to be in front of camera like actors. I think most directors should do that because it is frightening. It really is.
Frank Oz, the director and producer of Muppet Guys Talking. Frank, thanks very much for spending this time with us. Much appreciated.
Thank you.
Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.